The tree of life is the subject for tonight, and it poses a very important problem. In semantics, you find that words play tricks on you just in the normal English language. But when you get into Bible terminology, it's even more difficult because a word on page 26 can mean one thing, and on page 38, it has a different meaning. And then there are other things that happen beside words themselves, and you'll see a few of those as we go along. You may even say to yourself, why couldn't they speak in such a way that we could understand them? And the reason is that if they did speak so that you could understand them, they would have to tell you practically nothing. That which you could understand would be so small that there would be no Bible. They had to gear it way above our level of intelligence so that we, in stretching, standing on tiptoe, muttering a few curses under our breath because we can't get it, keep stretching further and further and further until we are lifted beyond ourselves. And that is how our consciousness is expanded. There are other subtleties, namely that if you receive truth before you are ready for it, you will be trying to swallow a hot fire that will consume you. And so everything moves in divine sequence, not as we think it should be, but as a divine infinite mind knows it is. And as we begin to deflate the human ego, converting our will to the will of this infinite mind, we fall into a different rhythm. In the book of Genesis, we're told about two trees in the Garden of Eden, tree of life and the tree of good and evil. Most everybody knows about the tree of good and evil. We have all kinds of symbologies connected to it. Very few people have taken the time to learn about the tree of life. Now, actually, they are the same tree. There's only one. The tree of life is in the fourth dimension, and the tree of good and evil is in the third. And our view of the tree of life through the five senses gives us the tree of good and evil, which is our concept of the tree of life. And so the symbology in Adam and Eve was, do not eat of the tree of good and evil, which meant do not divide your consciousness from truth, from the one consciousness, from the tree of life, by living in a five-sense world, because that will separate you from life itself, and you'll be in the tree of good and evil, or the opposites. But of course, that is what the human world has done. And to learn how to live as one with the tree of life, instead of the tree of good and evil, is the Christ message. When you look out upon this world now, you're not looking at the tree of life. You're looking at your thoughts made external. They appear to be out there, and what you're seeing is that which you are thinking. In other words, you see form. And this form that you see is only your thought about that form. You have a mental idea about it, and that's what you're seeing, that mental idea. The thing that you're seeing never leaves your mind. You really never see anything outside of your own thought about something. And man isn't aware that he is looking at his own thought and labeling it a thing or a person or an activity or a condition. These things, persons, activities, conditions, are our own thought and never go outside of our own thinking apparatus. Now, what is really there, invisible to our thinking apparatus, is the tree of life. Now, if you go and look closely at a tree, you note that there's no favoritism to any of the branches. Each is fed from the same sap, the same life. Each is sustained by the same life. And you've never seen a branch turn around and pray to a tree for more. You've never seen a branch turn around and say to the tree, "The other branch has more than I," or "My leaves are too thin or too fragile." You've never seen a branch say that anything was wrong. The branch is completely satisfied to let the life of the tree sustain it. In fact, the branch could not live without the life of the tree sustaining it. Now that is the visible tree. Now we run into one of those funny little problems. We're learning that because the branch is one with the tree, it is fed and sustained. And we're told we must learn to be one with the tree of life, and we will be fed and sustained. And then something comes to mind which says, well, what about the tree that had fruit, but along came a frost? And even though the branch and the fruit were one with the tree, the frost killed the fruit. Couldn't that happen to us too? Even though we are one with the tree of life, couldn't the fruit of our being be killed just as the frost kills the fruit on a tree, even though the branch is one? Now, this isn't something we find in this chapter, but I would like us to look at it. Because there cannot be any parts of this comparison that come to you later unanswered. And so we have to find the answer to the paradox. And we do find it this way. When we have bad fruit, we despair. And when it changes to good fruit, we rejoice. When we have bad times, we seek a way to change them to good times. When the good times come, we sit back and we smile and we're happy. Now that's the mistake. You see, in reality, there's not just no bad fruit, there's neither any good fruit. And when we change the bad fruit to the good and rejoice, we're under the same illusion, but at the other side of it. The tree whose fruit is spoiled by the frost never was a real tree. The only tree that is real is a spiritual tree, and the only fruit that is real is a spiritual fruit. And we learn then, mystically, never to accept or seek signs, but rather to know that because there is only one tree, the tree of life, which is spiritual, and therefore invisible to human sense. That tree alone is functioning, and that tree is the one infinite consciousness. We are branches of that tree. And there's nothing that any of us can do to change it. China may attack some countries around it. Russia may grind its heel into Poland and Czechoslovakia. We may go out and attack a few countries with our imperialism. Any nation can go out and commit what the world calls a crime. But you'll find that the sun will still shine on its soil. There's no infinite mind that suddenly goes up to the sun and turns it away from a communist country or a capitalist country, a white country or a black country. The sun shines on all because the nations of the world are one people. They cannot be divided. All of the boundaries of land and water are false boundaries made by the mind of man. There are no boundaries, no divisions between the one consciousness and its manifestation. Now, just as the sun shines on all soil, the one consciousness is feeding each individual. And as you look out at the distressed peoples of the world, those who are lacking, those who are limited, those who are hungry, those who have not enough room to stretch out, those who can see no future, those who have no arms for protection, you must learn to look through that. Not be depressed by what you see, nor rejoice by what you see. But learn that neither the bad fruit nor the good fruit in the visible is the perfect invisible spirit which alone is present there. This is very difficult. We naturally feel a great sympathy and compassion for certain nations who lack. But mystically we do not feel that compassion. Because in the feeling of it, you are denying the invisible reality. You are accepting material selfhood, which you know is going to die, which you know is going to deteriorate, which you know is not divine creation. And you are in a state of violation of cosmic law. The reason a teaching such as this exists is because man of his own free will and his own intelligence will never know that he is violating cosmic law. Now the secret of non-violation of cosmic law is that you are never tempted and never succumb to the temptation to believe that there is two of anything. There aren't two apples, there aren't two people, there aren't two worlds, there aren't two planets, there aren't two nations. There is one invisible self. And that is the tree of life. And when you leave it, you're violating cosmic law and you will pay the price. The violation of cosmic law, the violation of the principle that there is only one infinite consciousness, one being, one self, one soul, one life, one body, one mind, is the coming into the tree of good and evil, which is ascribed to Adam and Eve. That's the fall from Eden. The belief that there is multiplicity. Because now we're looking through the senses of man, and we're looking at the one, but we're a branch cut off. And we cannot receive from the one. It's like cutting a branch off a tree. While the branch is on the tree, there may be 5,000 branches, but they are all one with the tree. So are we one with the one consciousness now. In our unawareness of it, we become unable to receive from the one consciousness, and now we have a divided consciousness. The one comes up to us, we receive it not, and we're in a different consciousness, a human, a personal sense of self, a little ego, instead of the one infinite ego. And now everything we see is in twos. Good, bad, high, low, hot, cold, healthy, unhealthy, life, death. And so the tree of knowledge of good and evil becomes the human experience, and it is the violation of the principle of one being. Now there's nothing that can happen in your life to change the fact that we are all one with each other, and we are all one with the one consciousness. This is an immutable fact. It is only our believing, consciously or subconsciously, that we are not one with each other and not one with the infinite consciousness, which takes us out of the sap of life, and this exhibits itself as a series of problems. Without the sap, no fruit, or fruit that deteriorates. Now this becomes the test then. Can you live in such a way that regardless of what comes into your experience, you consciously remember and act from that remembrance that this one there and this one here is the lie? There may be two appearing, but there is only one invisible self. And that one self is always the perfect divine consciousness, and now I can rest. I don't have to defend myself. I don't have to compete. I don't have to struggle. Because the one consciousness is feeding each branch, whether the branches know it or not, whether the other individuals know it or not, the one consciousness is feeding each branch. Now living then in the tree of life, the one consciousness means you're living in the awareness of an invisible force that permeates the universe. And you're not doing anything to make that force come to you. It is your being now. You're not turning to that force and directing it. You're not asking it to do something. You're not seeking anything from it. Because just as the force is flowing through the tree, it is flowing through you. And the big test is when you don't see that it is flowing from you, and the problem is at your front doorstep. That is where we most of the time fail. We stare at the problem, and we're looking now at our concept, or the tree of good and evil, and we're convinced that this is a real problem. We're hypnotized. There's nothing in the world that's going to convince us that this isn't real. One woman said, "My husband came home drunk, and you can't tell me that that was an illusion because I sat up all night because of it." No, we can't tell her that. But it was an illusion, and so was her sitting up all night. And she can continue to assert the fact that she saw it, she went through it, it was her experience, and you can't change that. But she's violating cosmic law. She's living in the tree of good and evil. To live in the tree of life, one would have to be in a certain consciousness which says, I smell it, I see it, it's disgusting, it's revolting, it's disturbing, but it isn't here. Now you say, well, how can we do such a thing? The answer is that whether you like it or not, this is the way to Christhood. And you'll find that all of these things are happening because it's kind of like a police whistle. Suddenly you hear the whistle. You didn't want to violate. You didn't want to go through that light. You didn't want to turn on that double yellow. Or if you did, you hoped nobody would see you. But here's that whistle. And you stop. And that's the same thing. When some discord comes into your life, it doesn't make any difference what kind of discord. It happens just like a police whistle. It's there to call your attention to the fact that you are not living in the tree of life. You may be angry. You may wish this discord didn't happen. You may lose your temper. But always you're missing the point that this discord, which happened, is calling your attention to the fact that if you were in the tree of life and not in the tree of good and evil, this discord could not happen. And so karmic law hits you right now. Right now it points the finger at you and it says, this is the problem. And you have deviated from the law, pay the price. But it's only a $2 fine, or a $5 fine, or a $10 fine, and if you didn't have these fines, you might one day go over a cliff. And all these little $2 ones are saving you from that. The words are rather ugly, but the point must be made that we do not have the right to live in our own human will. As long as we live in our own human will, we have two wills, the will of the infinite and our own. We have the infinite ego and the little ego. Now, as you know, life is full of the little ego. And even those of us who would like to be saints on earth find that we have that ego just like everyone else. And two who have that ego will find friction between them. Always the friction occurs because there are two instead of one. And that friction can occur in business. That friction can occur in marriage. That friction can occur between parent and child, between friends, between relatives. It can occur on various levels of our life, and it is always the same. It is a conflict of egos. You may not be forceful about your ego, but it's there. And that ego is saying, here am I, and this is what I would like to get done. And the divine ego is saying, as long as there is a you, you're in two-ness because there is only I, the one infinite self. And this is how we lose the teaching of the tree of life in the Garden of Eden. Now the fruit of a tree is translated into the experiences that we undergo along the way. Our experiences are the fruit that we receive from the tree in which we live. And if you find that your fruit, your experiences are bitter, difficult, always making you stumble, you're finding that there is an answer. And that is the death of the human will, the human ego, and the acceptance of the truth that the very substance of life in you has a will of its own. And you may not stand in its way unless you wish to be living outside of the law and the grace and the power of God. Now, we've seen many people around us who live in their own ego. We've all read the Frank Merriwell stories. We've all read the Dale Carnegie stuff. And it's telling us how to be bigger and better and more healthy and more successful. It's all a matter of a greater ego for you and a greater ego for me. Pampering our own individuality is the way of this world. And it seems very intelligent to most people. Now, there is another way. It's the way of the contemplative. The contemplative does not struggle to survive, does not struggle to compete, does not struggle to forge ahead. Instead, he retires to the center of his being and lives in the realization that he himself is the very sap of life. And he contemplates the nature of that sap of life, its power, its grace, its love, its ever-presence. And as he contemplates these virtues of the divine of his own being, he is very active in inner peace. And this inner peace translates itself into fruit, into fruitful experiences. And these are enduring. These are graced. These are ordained. These are sustained. And these experiences are harmonious. No one can take them away. No one can deprive the contemplative of the fruits of his own inner peace. All of the power of the infinite is flowing through that. The little ego, though, of him who is struggling for great success, may seem exalted for a time. But we find it is not enduring. It topples. It is a false castle. And so the contemplative is really living the mystical way of life, aware that as he withdraws from the fight, his strength increases. As he permits his consciousness to be the infinite expressing itself, there is no power on earth to oppose him. Never does he believe that he is in a state of two-ness, that there is the divine and me. Never does he believe that there is divine power and my power, divine mind and my mind, divine life and my life. He has learned the great secret that the only life there is the divine life, and that life is mine, and there is no power on the earth to stand before the divine life that I am and overthrow me and take from me what is mine. This then is the power of the contemplative. Now we're learning to live in the contemplative life. to rest in our inner peace, and it is a matter of trusting. Trusting so deeply that as problems bounce into your life, you catch them on the bounce. And instead of saying, well, show me a sign, God, that this problem isn't real, you're able to look at the problem and know that if it is real, God is not real. If it is there, there's nothing in the world that can take it away. If it is real, then all of the teachings of the great scriptures of the world are false. There is no problem on the face of the earth when you are living in the tree of life and letting its life be your life. Now, to take a practical case so that we can interpret this into daily living, let's look at the problem of the woman whose husband is always drunk. First, there must be the realization that God is all. The divine life is all. And the divine life is not drunk. And therefore, drunkenness is an appearance. And now we have the problem of the appearance and the accompanying problems that the appearance brings. And we are forced to rise higher than the human ego, which rejects and rebels against that problem. We are forced to rise above the natural instinct to condemn, the natural instinct to despise. This is a demand on us, not upon the drunk. And if we pass the test of rising above the odor, above the appearance, above the various undesirable activities that accompany drunkenness, we will come to a place called overcoming, in which we finally know and find that inner peace which says, you were told to love thy neighbor, and it didn't say under certain conditions. It said, love thy neighbor. Now, humanly, we have no ability to do that. Our love is fickle. Our love is selfish. But when you are resting in the one consciousness, something happens in you so that your relationship to God and man changes. And you find you are lifted above human capacities for love, and a divine love pours through you, just as the sun shines on China and Russia and Thailand and Vietnam and wherever else there may be a problem area. That love shines right on the drunk. And it's the love that's coming through you. But in reality, that love is shining on the reality of the drunk, not on the drunk. It's shining on the invisible, perfect self through which the one consciousness is flowing, and you have passed the test. Oh, it's very difficult. But we have chosen this way because we feel that the only way to reach the place where the peoples of the world are united, not in some false bonds of treaties, not in agreements, but united spiritually. That way can only come by, instead of watering the earth with our blood, learning how to rise above all appearances and never let ourselves be separated from the one consciousness. The power of the sunbeam tells us the same. We see the sunbeam always connected to the sun. And just as that sun shines throughout the universe, never separated from its own sunbeams, giving life to all, which we wouldn't have without it, so we in spiritual living rise up to the invisible Christ. That is our sun. And its sunbeams, its activity is called the Holy Ghost. The activity of the Christ, the Holy Ghost beams, become the activity of our being. And as we consciously know this, we are ever one with that Christ, and that Christ is the vine, which is one with the Father, one with the infinite. And all these little words that are so ecclesiastical in sound begin to translate into a different meaning. So it isn't a question of holy religion. It's a question of good, basic, common sense that says, if the infinite life is the only life, every time I depart from it, in my mind, I am a branch cut off and I'm going to wither and die. The moment I am cut off from that infinite life, through ignorance, superstition, fear, doubt, lack, limitation, the belief in good and evil, I'm only hurting myself. Now, I've seen one individual go up and then down, up and down, up and down. Some days it's good and some days it's bad. Some days the organs of the body are working right and some days not. And we discovered in this case that the problem was that there is an individual will that is trying to make these organs work right. And you see, that is the separation from the tree of life. You don't make the organs work right. You accept that in spite of the fact that they do not seem to work right, that invisibly they are working right. You accept that there cannot be the divine and something else. There cannot be the divine and a mortal. You do not have two. And as long as you remember this, you can always say, but even if the organs of my body are not working right, that cannot be the life of God. Because the life of God is working right. And therefore, this body that seemingly is not working right is not my body. It doesn't belong to me at all. The only body I have is working right, because the life of God must be the life of my body. And that's the secret of the tree of life. The life of the tree must be the life of the branch, and we are the human branch until we graduate from that belief and find that we are the spiritual branch. Now then, if tonight the only thing you got out of this was that you must reject any imperfect life that seems to be yours, then you will see that this is the whistle which is saying to you, now I'm blowing the whistle on you, and what you do next is going to determine your tomorrow. If when I blow the whistle you struggle, you strive to increase the adrenaline flow so that your heart goes better, or you try to do this or try to do that, you're failing the test, and tomorrow you will be just as subject to the condition that today you may have healed. You will be subject to it because you didn't learn the spiritual principle behind it. You didn't learn that this moment you are not in a life apart from God. You are not in a life apart from the one infinite mind. You are not apart from the one infinite being. Now, you may have been called upon to do this many thousands of times, and again many thousands more to come. Each time it is the same demand. Do not accept that you have a life that can be imperfect. The moment you do, you fail the test, and you're not ready for the next step in spiritual development. But when you pass the test, when you accept that this which is hurting me, pinching me, threatening me, seemingly destroying me, it's doing all this to the wrong me. That's not me. My life is the life of God. In that moment, you will find a moment of rest. You will find a great relief. You will discover you have turned to a truth which is power. And you shall know this truth, and this truth will make you free. I and the Father are the one life, and therefore everything that is happening to me, which is imperfect, is a state of hypnotism. It cannot be real. And therefore, I will not be tempted into the acceptance that I have a life which is not under the perfect law of the Infinite Father. I will not be tempted. And so Jesus said to the devil, which was his own mind, you know, his own mind saying to him, do this and do that. And he said, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. Meaning, I have one life, and that life is divine. Impervious to destruction. And if you crucify it, I'm still living. If you hide all the food in the barns of the world so that I can get none, I still will eat and not be hungry. If you put an ocean in front of me, the Spirit within me will take me to the other side if that's where I must go, and the waters will part. Now watch how it happened when he told the disciples to take a ship to the other shore while he got a little quiet and spoke to the multitudes and sent them home. Then he went up into a mountain, and when he came and looked down, the ship was already on the sea, but there was a storm. And while they were bouncing in the storm, they saw Jesus walk out on the water and say to the storm, be still, it is I. He was practicing the principle of one life, that there is only the one, I, the perfect, infinite, invisible life. There is no other. And the storm was abated. And then Peter, not being able to live in the tree of life, but in the tree of good and evil, meaning he lived through his senses, he wanted to walk on the water. But it was bouncing, It was boisterous. And believing his senses, not being able to say, my life is the life of God, he could not do what Jesus had done. He was living in the flesh, in the human mind, in a life apart from the one self, and Jesus was living in the one self, the one Christ, the one invisible being. Now, the purpose of that episode was to point out the difference between the two trees. The one tree is all there is. And the belief that there can be good and evil is the illusion of this world. In a man, there comes a moment when the illusion invades him only to meet a spiritual consciousness which says, go ahead, do your work, you can't hurt me. I'm wearing the armor of truth. I don't need any defense against you. Now, a person should learn how to make contact with the center of his own being. At the start of every day, and never start a day without it. And then knowing that this world is full of whistles, full of imperfections that will appear, centered in the divine of your own being, you move out, and each imperfection that touches you hits the consciousness which you have established through the divine contact at the beginning of the day. The consciousness which does not flinch, does not defend, not concerned about competition, not concerned about struggling for survival, but is rooted in the knowledge that the life of God and my life are one and the same. That is the tree of life. Now, you know, all of the Bible is about that. It begins all the way up in Genesis, in the first book, Genesis. And then in the Revelation of St. John, we're told, he that overcometh, to him will I give to eat of the tree of life. And later in the Revelation, we're told, all the way at the end, and then he found the tree of life, which beareth fruit 12 months of the year. There are no barren periods in reality. There's no barren winter and a plentiful spring. The abundance of spirit is ever present 12 months of the year, meaning eternally. Now, perhaps one of the great secrets of how to attain this oneness with the tree of life, with a one consciousness, is to know that it's impossible to love God in time and in space. All those members of the churches who say, I believe in God, I worship God, I love God, will always fail the real test. They don't believe in God, and they don't love God, and they don't worship God. They worship their concept of God. They haven't the slightest knowledge who or what God is. You cannot believe in a God in time and space because God does not exist in time and space. Only in the infinite eternal. And so we have to lift our vision and realize that we are now in the infinite eternal. That's all there is. We're not looking into time and space for anything. We know all about time and space. It's just an extension of our belief in this material moment. And this material moment stretches out and becomes time and space. But we're living in a now, which is quite different than a moment in time and space. We're living in that which is not subject to the winds, to the tides, to the whims of the world. We're living in something that is bedrock, unchanging. It is invisible spirit permeating everything. And in this we trust. There are many passages in the Bible about the man who trusted in his own strength. But I, says the psalmist, I trust in the tree of life. Right here is the one consciousness now. And you practice your awareness of it so that in your awareness of it, all that would separate you from yourself meets the one consciousness, just as darkness meets light. The darkness of false belief meets the light of your consciousness, which is now illuminated. The false belief is dissolved in the truth, as the darkness is dissolved in the light. What is the truth? Some of us may have the notion that if I don't want to have a defective heart, I have to know the truth about the heart. But you don't. The way you live about truth in general will determine the activity of the heart. You don't have to know a specific truth about a specific thing. When the heart is defective, it isn't because you violated something about the heart. It's because you have been living in such a way that you have seen 3 billion people on this earth, 5 billion trees, 7 billion animals, so many ants, and so forth. That's your violation. Instead of going above it all and accepting and recognizing one, appearing to human sense as multiplicity. That's the great secret of loving our neighbor, to see the one functioning invisibly in each, in spite of the appearance. Now, it's a great big order. And you have to practice it consciously, unceasingly. The minute there's a little you there reacting, you've lost it. And then when there's a big problem, you're not ready for it. Now that is the meaning of contemplation. You don't wait for things to come to you. Your life is lived in the contemplation of the truth within yourself. And that becomes the invisible law of harmony without the need to meet things as they come. There's nothing to meet. There's a you which is not the you that appears on this earth. And that you is the invisible life of God. Unless you're living as that you in your consciousness, you are living in a second self, and it must live in violation of truth. Now this way is the way of living in your invisible self. accepting it as present, knowing that there is an I standing here that nobody can see. An I that my own human self doesn't even understand. But it is here, and it is I. And it is one with the tree of life. It is the tree of life itself. It is indestructible. When Jesus discovered this about himself, he was never tempted out of the tree of life except in minor ways at various times. As a result, the power that came through him was the original primal power of the universe. Never was it contaminated, deflected, or barricaded by a second self. Can you imagine yourself doing this? Letting the original primal power of the universe be you? You will do it to the degree that you practice doing it. It is a matter of experience, practice. The life that the world sees of you, the man and the woman wearing clothes, the man and the woman going to the office, the man and the woman in the home, this is the tree of good and evil. Until you accept the invisible self and then learn how to trust that invisible self to be where you are. That's why you see the great spiritual men and women in a quiet peace within themselves, seemingly unconcerned for world affairs. They're living in an invisible ocean of spirit. That's why Joel could go over this earth and know that wherever he went, something had gone there before him. And that's why those of you who have been abroad have found that when you sit in silence with those who are also sharing your love of the invisible God within yourselves, there is a bond so great that you know it has the full blessing of the divine. We find this bond only when we find ourselves. Our human bonds are very fickle again. But our spiritual bond draws to us those of like consciousness. And at every level, we find a different kind of joy. Now just think of the many branches in the tree of life. They're not all the same fruit. And you have the opportunity to cultivate each branch by listening, abiding, resting, accepting. That tree of life is also a tree of harmony. It's also a tree of love. It's a tree of peace. It's a tree of fulfillment. It's a tree of eternity. It is a tree in which every branch has a different fruit. And you have the privilege of harvesting these fruits as you become conscious of that life alone, so that you step out of the undivided, out of the divided consciousness of humanhood, and let the grace of the infinite do all the work. Right now, there is no one here whose invisible self is less than perfect. And if you are able to feel that invisible self, you would discover that there's nothing you could do that would make your visible self any less perfect than the invisible. That which you felt in the within through the law of externalization would appear in the without, and the invisible branches of the tree would become visible activities, all under perfect law. It wouldn't matter if you didn't have a dime in the house or a crust of bread. Somebody would knock on the door and offer you that which you needed. It wouldn't matter what part of the world you were in. And if you couldn't speak the language there, the language of spirit would be your common denominator. Always, those of your own spiritual household must come to you, and you to them, because mine own will come to me as long as I live in my invisible selfhood. Consciously. Then I am one with every individual on the face of the earth, with every animal, with every tree, with every ocean, with every planet, with every galaxy, because I am one with the central exchange. I am one with the infinite Father, who is one with all. And this is the secret which Moses came to reveal. Jesus, John, Peter, so many.